Hi, this is Gordon Deal. The award-winning Wall Street Journal This Morning starts right after this. The Wall Street Journal This Morning is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For Wall Street Journal listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Audible members also receive a complimentary subscription to the audio edition of the Wall Street Journal, delivered to your headphones daily. Try Audible today with a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audible.com/WSJ. All the details are on their website. That's audible.com/WSJ.
Live from the newsroom of the Wall Street Journal, this is the Wall Street Journal This Morning, America's first news with Gordon Deal.
The Ukraine and Russia are at odds again. Good morning, I'm Bruce Johnson in for Gordon Deal along with Mike Gavin on Friday, August 29th. Coming up this hour,
the Ukraine is looking for help from the West after accusing Russia of another escalation of fighting against the rebels.
President Obama says he has no plans for an imminent escalation of operations against the Islamic State.
NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell finally cracks down on domestic violence in the league.
And the Obama administration and Pennsylvania Governor Corbett reach a deal to expand Medicaid in the Keystone State.
The deal makes Pennsylvania the 27th state to agree to expand its Medicaid program under the health law. That means that around 500,000 low-income Pennsylvanians will be able to get coverage through Medicaid starting in 2015. The Obama administration, it's a really big win.
Wall Street Journal reporter Louise Radnofsky will have more coming up in about 20 minutes. Well, Kiev and its Western backers are accusing Moscow of sending Russian troops and armor to fight alongside rebels in eastern Ukraine, dimming hopes for a diplomatic solution to the crisis and prompting the U.S. and Europe to threaten new sanctions. Ukrainian President Poroshenko convened an emergency meeting of his security chiefs yesterday and vowed that Ukraine can defend itself. He dispatched troops to meet the Russian-backed advance as his government ordered the reinstatement of a draft. But while officials in Kiev called on the West for support, including military aid, the initial reaction from the U.S. and Europe included only frustration with the Kremlin, but no immediate action. In a news conference, President Obama ruled out a U.S. military response, but warned of more sanctions for Moscow. However, he didn't say what those sanctions would be. Also speaking out yesterday, UN-U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power.
We see Russia's actions for what they are, a deliberate effort to support and now fight alongside illegal separatists in another sovereign country.
In an apparent sign of defiance, Russian President Putin demanded Kiev end its military operation immediately. President Obama has signaled the U.S. has no immediate plans to escalate military operations against Islamic State extremists in Iraq or Syria. At a news conference in Washington, Mr. Obama stressed the need to counter the terrorist group's activity while formulating a broader strategy to protect U.S. interests and allies.
We need to make sure that we've got clear plans and that we're developing them. At that point, I will consult with Congress and make sure that their voices are heard.
Mr. Obama said his administration is still developing a strategy for possible airstrikes in Syria. The president's comments hasten calls from U.S. lawmakers for Mr. Obama to outline a strategy. A spokesman for House Speaker John Boehner said, and I quote, "The fact that the president admitted he does not have one should alarm every American." NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has taken one of his strongest stances yet on player discipline, telling league owners in a letter that he is significantly increasing the penalties for domestic violence incidents. More now from the Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Weinstein.
The move comes after Mr. Goodell drew widespread criticism for the two-game suspension of Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice, who was accused of assaulting his fiancée earlier this year. In the letter, the commissioner, for the first time, admitted he didn't get it right in deciding the Rice penalty. He said the public response reinforced his belief that the NFL is held to a higher standard. With that, Mr. Goodell announced that first-time offenders now will be subject to a six-game suspension, and second-time offenders will be banned indefinitely. The player could apply for reinstatement a year later. The new rule also applies to NFL employees. The penalties were implemented without the formal input of the NFL Players Association, an unusual step in a league where most disciplinary matters are collectively bargained. The union said yesterday that if it believes a player's due process rights are infringed upon, it will defend its members. Bruce?
The Wall Street Journal this morning's Mike Weinstein. It is 10 after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. And don't forget to check out the new Wall Street Journal radio app, free for iPhone and iPad. You can hear episodes of this program, plus things like tech features and personal finance reports like Watching Your Wallet. It's the new Wall Street Journal radio app. Good morning. Bruce Johnson in today for Gordon Deal. 8 months after the deadly Ebola epidemic began in Guinea, there still are not enough doctors, nurses, and epidemiologists to keep it from spinning out of control. The World Health Organization announced yesterday that more than 40% of the 3,000-plus cases reported since the outbreak began in December have occurred in the past 3 weeks alone. At least 1,552 people have died. The WHO says more than 20,000 people could be infected before the outbreak can be brought under control. Now, Wall Street Journal reporter Betsy McKay has been on top of this story. Betsy, what else is the WHO saying about this?
The WHO put out a roadmap today, kind of laying out what it thinks that will be needed to bring this outbreak under control. They said it will take 6 to 9 months, and that more than 20,000 people could end up being infected before this emergency is over. So, so far, a little more than 3,000 cases have been reported. Of them, about 1,500 have died. The WHO says those numbers are an underestimate. But still, 20,000 is a significant number more than today. And that's because this outbreak is really spinning out of control.
It sounds like things are definitely getting worse, right?
They are. In Liberia, primarily, Ebola is raging in the capital city of Monrovia. And, what distinguishes this outbreak from previous Ebola outbreaks in other parts of Africa is that it's being transmitted in urban areas where people are, more people are in contact with many more people. So, that is bringing a realization about in the global health community that what's needed here is a real disaster response, not a traditional outbreak response where you have, epidemiologists and doctors, doctors isolating and treating patients and epidemiologists tracking, the people they've been in contact with. This outbreak is now on such a scale that it is really a humanitarian emergency rather than a simple, an infectious disease outbreak is never simple, but it's not your typical infectious disease outbreak.
So the response to this is going to need to be similar to the response to the Haitian earthquake or the Japanese tsunami.
Exactly. And in fact, they're starting to call in, some of those people. So the U.S. Agency for International Development has a Foreign Disaster Assistance Office, Disaster Response, and they have gotten involved this month. They've sent a team over. They've airlifted medical equipment, plastic sheeting. They're talking about putting up treatment centers. What's really needed now, according to Doctors Without Borders and other groups that are operating in these countries, are more treatment centers. You need to get people who have Ebola isolated away from other people, away from people that it can infect, so that you can break the chains of transmission. And right now in Monrovia, there just aren't enough hospitals. I mean, people with Ebola are having to stay at home, and they're passing the disease on to others who take care of them.
We're talking to Wall Street Journal reporter Betsy McKay. Betsy, your story talks about a Liberian neighborhood that is under quarantine. This illustrates what is missing, right?
Yeah. West Point is a really densely packed neighborhood in Monrovia. A lot of people there just have, initially and even now didn't believe that Ebola is a disease, is something that exists. And so it's just going wild. There are a lot of people sick. We have followed a woman who died, and a health worker was unable to get an ambulance for her when she was still sick. She basically lay dead in her house for 5 days before her body was picked up. Ebola victims are infected infectious, sadly, even after they're dead, as I think many people know now. And so their bodies have to be picked up by special teams, special crews who can remove them safely. So it's a really sad situation there. There aren't enough health workers. I mean, you know, what our wonderful correspondent who's there on the ground, Drew Hinshaw, found is that there aren't enough health workers. They can't reach people that they need. Pharmacies are running out of medicine. Food supplies are running low. I mean, it is like a conflict zone.
Betsy, thanks. Wall Street Journal reporter Betsy McKay with the latest on the Ebola epidemic. It is 19 after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning, and now here's Mike Gavin with some of our top news stories. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bruce. President Obama says that he has ruled out a U.S. military response to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, but says that the escalating incursion would bring more costs for Moscow. United States Ambassador to the U.N. Samantha Power says that somebody needs to get Moscow's attention.
In the face of these deeply alarming actions, the most important question for us now is not what we should say to Russia. The most important question is what we should do to make Russia listen.
Meanwhile, the number of McDonald's restaurants shut down by Russia's consumer regulator continues to rise as tensions between Moscow and the West grow. A total of 8 McDonald's have been shut down by Russia's consumer regulator over alleged sanitary violations, up from 6 previously. Some of the nation's largest banks distanced themselves from a cyber attack that hit J.P. Morgan Chase, saying they had no indication they had been the victims of a similar incident. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and other big banks say they haven't detected signs that their systems had been infiltrated by hackers. Their comments came as law enforcement officials pursued investigations of potential breaches at J.P. Morgan and a handful of other financial institutions that haven't yet been identified. Stocks took a slight tumble yesterday after 3 positive sessions in a row on fears of an escalating conflict between Russia and Ukraine. David Katz of Matrix Asset Advisors in New York says that while the conflict dragged down some stocks yesterday, there are some positive signs here at home.
You had good employment numbers, good GDP numbers. You continue to have a pretty steady flow of M&A activity. All of that is pretty bullish.
And just when you thought it was safe to recline your seat, another plane had to be diverted this week after 2 passengers got into a scuffle about legroom. ABC News that says that an American Airlines flight from Miami to Paris had to make an unscheduled stop in Boston when a man got so angry at a passenger in front of him who tried to recline their seat, he allegedly grabbed the arm of a flight attendant who tried to defuse the situation, forcing air marshals on board to then intervene. This comes on the heels of a similarly diverted United Airlines flight this past Sunday, also because of a dispute over legroom.
All right, 2 things. Either have the airlines put in straight back seats or charge passengers for wanting to put their seat back.
Yeah, I think there should be no reclining in coach, because airlines for years, as you know, have been squeezing us in coach. They're squeezing out every little quarter inch that they can get. And at this, you know, maybe 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it was okay to recline and the person in front of you wouldn't have a big problem with it. And then, look, I'm not saying that someone should get so mad that they obviously grab the arm of a flight attendant and the air marshals have to get involved, but I don't think in coach you should be able to recline at all. So, like you said, straight back seats.
All right, I agree. All right, it's 20 after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Another important step for the Affordable Care Act in one of our nation's larger states. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett has reached a deal with the Obama administration to extend the Keystone State's Medicaid program to 500,000 low-income residents. It includes everyone earning up to a third more than the federal poverty level, or about $16,000 for a single adult. Wall Street Journal reporter Louise Radnofsky is here now. Louise, talk about the importance of Pennsylvania signing on.
They have reached a deal, and the deal makes Pennsylvania the 27th state to agree to expand its Medicaid program under the health law. That means that around 500,000 low-income Pennsylvanians will be able to get coverage through Medicaid starting in 2015. The Obama administration, it's a really big win. Getting to 27 states makes them feel more confident that they can get to more states and that the rest will eventually fall in line. There's a complicated negotiation going on there with the governors as they're trying to coax them to participate. And for Governor Corbett as well, who has a pretty uphill reelection bid in the state, this is seen as something that could boost his chances.
Why is the administration pushing states to do this?
The administration has a problem that in many ways was created by a Supreme Court decision in June 2012 that gave states the choice over whether to participate in the Medicaid expansion that had been part of the health law when it was passed in 2010. The law in many ways is assuming that people will get Medicaid at a certain income level, low income level, and that people with higher incomes would get tax credits towards the cost of coverage. Once the Medicaid provision became optional, there was essentially a gap in the law's ability to getting coverage to those people, and they were previously going without. It was a really big headache for the administration, and they've invested a lot of time talking with governors, trying to get them to agree. At the same time, Medicaid advocates of the program have said that they can't give away too much in negotiations or they risk undermining the program for everybody else.
We're talking to Wall Street Journal correspondent Louise Radnofsky. Louise, is there anything in particular that Governor Corbett asked for that caused this?
Well, Governor Corbett had asked for a lot, and he got some of it. One of the things he wanted was a work requirement for some Medicaid beneficiaries. He didn't get that. That, by many people who are more supportive of the traditional Medicaid program, was a line that they didn't want to see crossed. What he did get was a concession in which he can charge premiums for participation in the program to some people, people with incomes above the federal poverty line, of up to 2% of those people's household income. It's a small amount, but for conservatives in particular and Republicans who want to see changes to the Medicaid program, it's the kind of personal responsibility tenet that they think is very important. So that's something he got. Another thing that Pennsylvania said is that it's won permission to charge an $8 copayment for beneficiaries who use the emergency room in situations that aren't emergencies. Those changes are being criticized by some conservative advocates as a sign that Corbett didn't get enough, that he caved, and by longstanding supporters of Medicaid to be changes that will harm low-income beneficiaries.
How could this help Mr. Corbett politically?
Medicaid expansion is the sort of issue that in many states, and certainly in Pennsylvania, has the support of a majority of Democratic voters, quite a significant majority. It's also something that's supported by many independent voters. So in a race in which he's pretty far behind his Democratic challenger right now, including trailing by 25 points in one poll, this is the sort of thing that he would be counting on to help him get an edge. The Democratic challenger, Tom Wolf, had criticized him for not moving faster to expand Medicaid and said that the longer the negotiations with the federal government dragged on, the more Mr. Corbett was playing games with the welfare of lower-income people in the state. So he'd certainly made that a campaign issue.
Wall Street Journal reporter Louise Radnofsky. It's 30 minutes after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Coming up next, California continues battling a drought.
The Wall Street Journal this morning is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of audiobooks with over 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For Wall Street Journal listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Audible members also receive a complimentary subscription to the audio edition of the Wall Street Journal, delivered to your headphones daily. Try Audible today with a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audible.com/WSJ. All the details are on their website. That's audible.com/WSJ.
If you don't have a will, the court may dictate what happens to your property and minor children. Don't let that happen. It's National Make-A-Will Month, so call or visit LegalZoom today for special pricing on wills and living trusts. LegalZoom has been helping people protect their families for over 13 years. They make it painless to get the legal help you need. Don't forget to enter WSJ in the referral box at checkout to save more. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help, but they're not a law firm. Protect your family and future today at LegalZoom.com.
Wake up to the Wall Street Journal this morning, now on the WSJ radio app.
It's 34 after the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. I'm Bruce Johnson, filling in for the vacationing Gordon Deal, along with Mike Gavin on Friday, August 29th, heading into a long Labor Day holiday weekend, the unofficial end of summer. Coming up this half hour, Ukraine accuses Russia of another invasion while the West considers sanctions. California continues to battle a three-year drought, and Google Trends expert Zaina Aston is coming up in about 10 minutes. In the face of one of California's worst droughts on record, the state legislature is considering regulating underground water for the first time. Californians have long battled over rights to rivers, lakes, and other surface water supplies, but the drought is finally shifting the focus to groundwater, which accounts for about 40% of water used in normal years and up to 60% in drought years. Covering that story is the Wall Street Journal's Jim Carlton, who joins us now. Jim, what about the background of the situation in the Golden State?
California California has been locked in a three-year drought, and so the reservoirs are dwindling, the rivers are drying up, and now more and more cities and farms around the state are turning to groundwater. In a normal year, groundwater accounts for as much as 40% of the water used in the Golden State. But in a drought year like now, it's 60%. And so there's kind of a call to regulate groundwater. And surprisingly, I didn't realize this until I started reporting this, but California is the only Western state that actually doesn't regulate groundwater at all at the state level. Historically in California, the water wars have been over surface water rights, such as from the snow melt in the Sierra Nevadas that go into the Sacramento River. And, you know, the rivers are, you know, the river water is channeled down all the way to Los Angeles, you know, hundreds of miles away, and from the Colorado River through several states into Southern California. And really, groundwater has been kind of under the radar, but, you know, farmers in particular in the Central Valley rely on it in dry times, and they're pretty upset at the idea of any regulation.
Could we see some groundwater regulation in the future?
Yes, bills are now moving through Sacramento that would regulate groundwater. It would do things such as, for the first time, monitor at a statewide level and how much groundwater is being used, and also put limits on how much people can take out. Right now, you know, if you're a farmer and you've got a straw and you've got water under you, you can pretty much take as much water out of the ground as you want. The problem with that is in some parts of the state, many parts of the state, that the groundwater basin underneath is going down. It's gone down more than 100 feet in many parts of the state. And as a result, wells are going dry, springs and creeks are going dry. And so this regulation would try to turn that around.
Is there any chance that those who don't want regulation could prevail?
Well, never underestimate the power of litigation to tie up almost anything in California. And there's likely to be possibly a legal move to try to block regulations at the statewide level. That said, there are counties that are taking action on their own. The Orange County Water District in Southern California has long been a leader in management of groundwater, and then Santa Clara in the north has been somewhat of a leader also. I was in San Luis Obispo County a few days ago, and they basically have no district to manage the water, so they just decided to try to vote for a special district that would do that. So a lot of things happen at the local level, but also the statewide level. So even though there's going to be opposition, it's likely something's going to happen. Right now, the problem is that they don't really know how much is being used. They don't really know how much is in the ground, and that's because, it's out of sight. It's out of mind. And what the fear is that one day there's going to be some a big farm pumping water, and suddenly the well's going to be dry.
Jim, thank you. That is Wall Street Journal correspondent Jim Carlton in California. It's 22 before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. And for our daily podcast of the Wall Street Journal this morning, check out iTunes, the iHeartRadio app, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and of course the Wall Street Journal radio app. Time now for our weekly segment about the top Google searches in the week gone by. And joining us for that is Google Trends expert Zaina Aston. Zaina, good morning.
Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
I'm well. Well, I looked at the top five Google searches of the week gone by. I see no Islamist State, no Ukraine, no Ebola. In fact, the newsiest search was for that 9-year-old girl in Arizona who accidentally fatally shot a firing range instructor with an Uzi. Is it the end of summer where we're not getting people looking for hard news stories or what?
Well, I think there is a general interest in those stories, but what we look in terms of trending search items is change over the week. So something that has really come out of nowhere, something that has gone from being relatively less searched to an increase in search volume to such a degree that it kind of shows up on our radar. I think there's been some regular interest in Ukraine and the Islamists kind of across the board over the past few weeks, and we've definitely seen those spike with particular news headlines, particular stories. But in terms of search volume change, these are the top ones, yes.
All right, Zaina, we know that people love these live award shows. So trending in the week gone by, both the VMAs on MTV and the Emmys back on Monday night.
Yes, so there's a lot of search interest clustered around those. So people were of course, looking up both of those to find out who won what award. But if there's always the interest around, you know, the best dressed. And, of course, there are those breakout media moments where unexpected things happen that capture people's imaginations and interests and send them to search to find out more. For example, you know, Miley Cyrus was up to her usual media-grabbing antics and ended up having a homeless youth accept her award. And made a statement about homelessness in L.A. So there was a lot of interest in her in particular, and then in this charity that she's now backing.
All right, now, for all the animal lovers out there, we not only had National Dog Day on the list of top Google searches, but Hello Kitty. How about that?
Well, exactly. In fact, fans of Hello Kitty were searching for details on the surprise news that the iconic Japanese character is actually not a cat. Her creators say that Hello Kitty is actually a little girl that lives in London. And the news came from an anthropologist who is working on a Hello Kitty exhibit at the National, Japanese American Museum in LA. And the parent company of Hello Kitty corrected some of her text notes that refer to Hello Kitty as a cat. So this has kind of taken people by surprise and definitely had them looking at more information about the history of this very well-known icon.
Oh, the humanity, I think. One more thing to talk about on the list of top Google searches, the U.S. Open Tennis Championship.
Yes, lastly, the U.S. Open is trending this week as tennis fans search for their favorite pros and for match outcomes. If you actually search for U.S. Open, you'll get a list of scores and latest standings that'll come up right into that search page. But you also see, you know, sideline searches around that as well. So Michael Jordan, for example, appeared at Federer's first round game, and that was quite a hot topic. So people were looking up why Michael Jordan was there and some interesting interactions that happened on the court.
Well, Zaina, good to talk to you. Hopefully we'll have a lot of people searching quite a bit during the long Labor Day holiday weekend, and to you, have a good holiday. That is Google Trends expert Zaina Alston. 12 minutes before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning, and time now for our automotive update with Auto Trader Alerts. They'll let you know when the price drops in a car you've been searching for. And autotrader.com will even send you cars that match what you're looking for. Sign up for text alerts at autotrader.com. A 2012 report shows that the number of women drivers in the U.S. has surpassed that of men. And although the car buying experience still seems a man's game, with 91% of car salesmen at franchise dealerships being male, Wall Street Journal contributor A.J. Baim says a growing percentage of car buyers are women.
According to J.D. Power, 39% of cars are being purchased by women as of 2013, which may not seem like a lot, but that's up from 37% 2 years earlier. That's a difference of over 310,000 automobiles.
By the way, that 2% shift in female buyers that Baim talked about represents more than 300,000 vehicles. It is now 11 before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Now here's Mike Gavin with some of our top news stories.
Good morning. President Obama is signaling that the U.S. has no immediate plans to escalate military operations against Islamic State extremists in Iraq or Syria, stressing the need to counter the group's advance while formulating a broader strategy to protect U.S. interests and allies.
The violence that's been taking place in Syria has obviously given ISIL a safe haven there in ungoverned spaces. And in order for us to degrade ISIL over the long term, we're going to have to build a regional strategy.
The National Institutes of Health says it will begin testing an experimental Ebola vaccine in humans next week. The vaccine to be tested is a preventative one, not a treatment for people who already have the virus. Military officials say the pilot of an F-15 jet that crashed this week in the remote Virginia mountains has been killed. Colonel James Keefe said his thoughts and prayers are with the family of the pilot, whose identity was not disclosed. The pilot and jet were with the 104th Fighter Wing of the Massachusetts Air National Guard. The maker of the popular Angry Birds games, Rovio Entertainment, says that its chief executive is stepping down as of January next year. The company and its iconic Angry Birds game franchise have struggled recently amid stiff competition from a new breed of mobile game developers. Stock futures are looking up this morning after a down day yesterday, caused mainly by fears of an escalating conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Ernie Cecilia at Bryn Mawr Omar Trust says that while turmoil overseas is something to keep an eye on, he still has confidence in stocks.
Even the corrections that we've had have been relatively shallow. So unless there's something that's more systemic, more sustained, I think that price corrections will continue in that manner and that volume will remain relatively light as we close the summer out.
Oil prices are headed higher this morning also because of the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Long known for its light coffee, Dunkin' Donuts is going dark. In the latest move to poach customers in the escalating Java wars, the company debuted its new dark roast coffee, the first hot dark roast in its 64-year history, on Thursday at a Modesto, California store, and plans to sell it nationwide starting September 22nd.
How do you think that'll go, a cup of dark Joe?
I'm not a dark Joe fan myself, but I know a lot of people are, so I think that's going to go over very, very well.
I like dark donuts myself. All right, Mike, thanks a lot.
You can take both.
Yeah. 12 minutes before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning, and time now for our automotive update with Auto Trader Alerts. They'll let you know when the price drops in a car you've been searching for. And AutoTrader.com will even send you cars that match what you're looking for. Sign up for text alerts at AutoTrader.com. A 2012 report shows that the number of women drivers in the U.S. has surpassed that of men. And although the car buying experience still seems a man's game, with 91% of car salesmen at franchise dealerships being male, Wall Street Journal contributor A.J. Baim says a growing percentage of car buyers are women.
According to J.D. Power, 39% of cars are being purchased by women as of 2013, which may not seem like a lot, but that's up from 37% 2 years earlier. That's a difference of over 310,000 automobiles.
By the way, that 2% shift in female buyers that Baim talked about represents more than 300,000 vehicles. It is now 11 before the hour on the Wall Street Journal this morning. Now here's Mike Gavin with some of our top news stories.
Good morning. President Obama is signaling that the U.S. has no immediate plans to escalate military operations against Islamic State extremists in Iraq or Syria, stressing the need to counter the group's advance while formulating a broader strategy to protect U.S. interests and allies.
The violence that's been taking place in Syria has obviously given ISIL a safe haven there in ungoverned spaces. And in order for us to degrade ISIL over the long term, we're going to have to build a regional strategy.
The National Institutes of Health says it will begin testing an experimental Ebola vaccine in humans next week. The vaccine to be tested is a preventative one, not a treatment for people who already have the virus. Military officials say the pilot of an F-15 jet that crashed this week in the remote Virginia mountains has been killed. Colonel James Keefe said his thoughts and prayers are with the family of the pilot, whose identity was not disclosed. The pilot and jet were with the 104th Fighter Wing of the Massachusetts Air National Guard. The maker of the popular Angry Birds games, Rovio Entertainment, says that its chief executive is stepping down as of January next year. The company and its iconic Angry Birds game franchise have struggled recently amid stiff competition from a new breed of mobile game developers. Stock futures are looking up this morning after a down day yesterday, caused mainly by fears of an escalating conflict between Ukraine and Russia. Ernie Cecilia at Bryn Mawr Trust says that while turmoil overseas is something to keep an eye on, he still has confidence in stocks.
Even the corrections that we've had have been relatively shallow. So unless there's something that's more systemic, more sustained, I think that price corrections will continue in that manner and that volume will remain relatively light as we close the summer out.
Oil prices are headed higher this morning also because of the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Long known for its light coffee, Dunkin' Donuts is going dark. In the latest move to poach customers in the escalating Java wars, the company debuted its new dark roast coffee, the first hot dark roast in its 64-year history, on Thursday at a Modesto, California store, and plans to sell it nationwide starting September 22nd.
How do you think that'll go, a cup of dark Joe?
I'm not a dark Joe fan myself, but I know a lot of people are, so I think that's going to go over very, very well.
I like dark donuts myself. All right, Mike, thanks a lot.
You can take both.
Yeah. Next, a look back at a rough summer in the movie theaters.
I'm Lex Friedman. I run my own business, so I know from experience, hiring new employees can be tough. Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 50-plus job sites, including Craigslist, LinkedIn, and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 200,000 businesses. And right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. That's ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ. One more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/WSJ.
The summer movie season has been known to start early. Captain America, The Winter Soldier hit theaters on April 4th, but some in Hollywood would prefer the 2015 season start right now. Excitement over a flurry of scheduled franchise sequels had a comparatively lousy summer this year, as executives at the nation's top movie theater chains and studios asking investors for patience about 8 months of it. We're joined now by Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter Eric Schwartzel. Eric, how bad has it been at the nation's movie plexes this summer?
2014 was a pretty lousy summer for the movie industry. Box office revenues were down more than 15% compared to 2013. But that's forced a lot of theater executives to say, hold on a second, we're going to be okay, because in 2015 we've got a number of big movies. And when I say that, I mean essentially big franchise sequels that you know are going to make a lot of money. You've got Fast and Furious 7. You've got Jurassic World, which is a sequel to the Jurassic Park movies. You've also got the sequel to The Avengers, which came out a couple years ago and grossed more than $600 million just in the U.S. alone. So there are a number of titles that they know are going to do very, very well. And it's really inspired a lot of theater executives to say, look, we know we had to take one for the team this summer, but if you stay with us and give us 8 months, we'll make it up to you.
Why are franchise sequels so profitable?
It's a pretty guarantee. I mean, it's as much of a guarantee as you can get in Hollywood, right? I mean, sequels always usually, they come with a built-in audience. We certainly have seen the summer schedules become more and more populated with them. You had sequels to Pitch Perfect coming, which was a pretty quiet movie about a college a cappella team that's built up a really sizable audience on cable and on home video. That sequel's coming. You've also got movies like Fast and Furious 7, which was supposed to come out this summer but was postponed after the death of one of its lead actors, Paul Walker. And so sequels, I mean, as much as you can point to, several sequels that have disappointed, right? But these ones coming, I think people are pretty optimistic about their prospects.
Eric, why was the summer of 2014 so disappointing?
It was really, 2014 was really just kind of an off year. There weren't a lot of the big flops. Like in 2013, we had movies like The Lone Ranger, which was just a massive, massive, massive flop by anyone's standards. 2014 didn't have any of those big gaffes, but it didn't really have any of those breakout hits either.
Eric, I'm sure we'll see you at the movie theaters this holiday weekend. Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter Eric Schwartzel. That'll do it for this hour. For Mike Gavin, I am Bruce Johnson in for Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to the Wall Street Journal This Morning.
Wix.com lets you easily create a beautiful professional website for free. With hundreds of stunning templates, cool features, and popular apps, you can get your business online today. Start now at Wix.com. That's Wix.com.